and welcome to the Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on coronavirus concerns around the state, including local school closures to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Brandon Smith reports on bills that passed and failed at the close of the 2020 legislative session, and Chris Nolte has a conversation with Deb Stempowski, Assistant Director for Decennial Programs for the U.S. Census Bureau. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The Lake Central Community School Corporation is closing its doors for 4 weeks to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The Times reports, in a letter to parents Friday, Superintendent Larry Veracco said the decision was made after close monitoring of the situation. Veracco said district leaders do realize this decision, quote, will cause challenges for many of our families. Teachers encourage students to take home all materials Friday for the long break. Hammond School Superintendent Scott Miller said the district will be closed for the next 3 weeks with e-learning opportunities available outside of spring break week. To get a complete updated list or to find out if your school, business, or daycare center is closed because of the concerns, visit emergencyclosingcenter.com. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The IHSAA High School Boys Basketball Tournament is postponed immediately. In a press release Friday, the league had previously planned to limit crowds at this weekend's regional basketball games to just family and essential personnel. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Another person in Indiana has been sickened by the coronavirus, increasing the state's number of cases to 12. The Indiana State Department of Health said Thursday that the latest case is the second in Marion County, which includes Indianapolis. Also, Fiat Chrysler says a worker at its transmission factory in Kokomo tested positive for the coronavirus. The universities extending spring breaks or temporarily canceling classroom instruction have grown to include Ivy Tech Community College, Purdue, Indiana University, Butler, Ball State, DePaul, Indiana State, Valparaiso University, and the University of Evansville. Indiana High School Athletic Association Commissioner Bobby Cox. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Indiana Democratic legislative leaders say they and the public aren't getting enough answers from Governor Eric Holcomb about the state's response to the coronavirus. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brenda Smith reports that's as GOP leaders express confidence in Holcomb.
As other governors have, for instance, restricted large gatherings in response to coronavirus, Holcomb has been largely silent. Senate Democratic leader Tim Lannon says that won't work in the midst of a public health crisis.
The clearer it can be made as to here's what we're doing as a state, here's how you should react, you know, as a citizen to this, the better off we're going to be.
Republican Senate Leader Roderick Bray says the Holcomb administration assured lawmakers it has all the tools it needs to address the issue.
I know the governor is taking it extremely seriously. It's the most important thing he's been dealing with in the last few days, I would guess, and it will continue to be.
Holcomb's office says the governor is convening experts, meeting with his cabinet, and keeping Hoosiers informed via in-person events and social media. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The Indiana House honored retiring Speaker Brian Bosma Monday as he officially stepped down from his position leading the chamber. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports Bosma is wrapping up a 34-year legislative career.
Nearly a third of the 100 members of the House spoke for Bosma's honoring resolution. They praised the Republicans' leadership during his 12-year tenure as Speaker, including, as with Democrat Cherish Pryor, the many things Bosma did behind the scenes that few ever knew about.
But they are very impactful to the citizens of this state, as well as people within this body. So thank you very much. I'll miss you.
Basma reflected on his years in office, gave advice to his colleagues, and praised the institution.
It is literally the crucible of democracy in this state, and you must work hard to protect it.
Basma is the longest-serving speaker in state history. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
There was a changing of the guard at the State House Monday as Todd Houston became the new Speaker of the Indiana House. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports Houston replaces Brian Basma, the longest-serving Speaker in state history.
And I will faithfully and impartially discharge my duties as Speaker of the House of Representatives.
And with that, Todd Houston was sworn into his new role, a move in the works for months. Basma announced last fall the 2020 session would be his last and quickly tabbed Houston as the speaker-elect. The Fishers Republican says he values the relationships he's made since joining the General Assembly on both sides of the aisle and looks to build them further.
I know we all share the same goal of making Indiana a better place, which will mean that I will expect and vigorously enforce the rules and decorum of this body to ensure as a place of thoughtful, spirited debate.
Houston was first elected in 2012. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Republican legislative leaders say Indiana made huge gains in healthcare and education in the 2020 legislative session. But Democrats decry missed opportunities. House Speaker Todd Houston cites some accomplishments: loosening regulations on public schools, shielding teachers from penalties over low student test scores, sending more money for career and technical education. And he points to what he calls huge strides in healthcare transparency.
This is a work that we will continue to do on this issue. We're going to spend the interim working with stakeholders to figure out how we can continue to make progress on lowering healthcare costs.
But Senate Minority Leader Tim Lehnen says Republicans ignored major issues that Hoosiers are calling for.
One would be gun safety. Nothing on that. Crickets, as they say. And then also reasonable criminal justice reform by way of reasonable marijuana law reform.
Lehnen says the GOP rejected even public debate on those issues.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Lawmakers sent legislation to the governor late Wednesday that would help prevent some patients from getting surprise medical bills. The bill would ensure patients will not face unexpected charges if they go to an in-network hospital, but a service is done by an out-of-network doctor. They could be billed for out-of-network charges if given a good faith cost estimate at least 5 days in advance. Representative Bill Smaltz says the bill is the start of lowering health care costs. Representative Bill Smaltz says the bill is the start of lowering health care costs.
This is the first step in a long process of unwinding a mess of overbilling expensive health care that's going to take some years to work out.
Several members of the House disagreed with Smaltz and says the bill doesn't lower costs or do enough to stop surprise billing. It also doesn't include emergency care. Representative Terry Austin says it will create more paperwork for healthcare professionals because of the good faith estimates.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
President and Chief Executive Officer of the South Shore Convention and Visitors Authority, Spiros Batistatos, says COVID-19 is having a worse impact on the Northwest Indiana tourism industry than 9/11. He recently spoke with Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson about the concerns. Here's the conversation.
What is the South Shore Convention and Visitors Authority doing to address COVID-19? Have you talked with any healthcare professionals that have made any recommendations, or has your organization put anything in place?
Well, we are using a common sense approach to avoid spreading the virus. We just literally, in the next few few hours, expect to announce the closure of our visitor center for a few weeks while we do some deep cleaning and disinfecting and really get at corners of the building that haven't been cleaned in a bit. Although it is a meticulously maintained building, you can never do too much deep cleaning. One of the biggest areas we feel of risk comes through the front door with the visitors in this instance, and we need to minimize that to protect our staff and keep, you know, our day-to-day mission going and the business going. With the threat of this spreading and the mobility of people in their cars, it's just not smart for us right now to keep the front doors of the visitor center open.
How many people visit this visitor center every month and every year?
We'll do about 350. It depends on what's going on in the programming of the building, but it'll go between 300 and 400,000 a year.
Has the South Shore CVA ever had to close the visitor center before due to any other kind of outbreak?
No.
Has any other of your marquee events, any of those been canceled or postponed as of yet?
Yeah, we unfortunately just received notice within the last 48 hours of the cancellation of the Lutheran basketball tournament, which is probably our longest running piece of business in the South Shore. We've been host to the Lutheran basketball tournament for 42, 43 years. Again, first time that they've ever canceled an event. This is an anomaly, and you know, all I can say about COVID-19 is it's extremely fluid. Probably 48 hours ago, it wasn't as critical as it has become in the last 48. With the cancellations of the NBA, of the NCAA with spectators, with universities shutting down logically because of spring break and where all the students could be and the possibilities for cross-contamination upon their return, this is a very, very fluid situation that tests your managerial skill and your ability to adapt. And I'll tell you this, I was running a convention bureau during 9/11, and this is far worse than 9/11.
Anything else you want to add that maybe I haven't asked you about in terms of events or precautions?
I think that this is a time right now for our neighbors and residents and employees and friends to use common sense. As I just got done meeting with our staff today, you know, we have to protect them, and in return, they have to help us protect each other. If you don't feel good, stay home. If you think you might have this, get tested. Do your part individually. Have the individual strength to do what's right to prevent the spread of this virus so we can get this behind us. We need to get to a plateau and watch the numbers fall. We need to ensure personal safety and personal health, and for that, every person has a responsibility, not just our organization or some other health. You know, it's an individual responsibility for every person that's listening to this show. Do the right thing. Get help if you need it. Get treatment, and let's avoid further contamination.
I know you work closely with the hotels. Do you any word on what they're doing to address this situation?
I've spoken to a number of our key attractions in the last 24 to 48 hours. Everybody is doing what you would expect. They're doubling and tripling down on housekeeping and disinfecting, and they've upped an already very good game. I mean, we have very, very clean hotels and facilities. We have very conscientious operators. We have a great industry. They're taking it to the next level beyond that. They're wiping down vacuum handles and curtain rods, and I mean, not just the regular door handle and surfaces you would expect, but they're digging into every corner of the hotel rooms that you can think of that you probably, you know, wouldn't think to look at. They have their staffs wiping down broom handles and mop handles. I mean, just to keep the cleaners clean.
Mm-hmm, right.
So, you know, I will tell you, our industry's on top of this. What we need to get through is the fear that's gripping America right now. We need to get past it. We need to get out of the unknown and back into a better place, and I'm hoping that's going to be in the next few days, and this will be, you know, behind us. It's going to get a little worse before it gets any better, but this is going to pass. It's just a question of when.
What are some of the key Northwest Indiana attractions that you had talked to?
I've been on the phone with Fair Oaks, I've been on the phone with Ameristar, with Horseshoe, with Albany's Candy, with the Mascot Hall of Fame, just touching bases with everyone on you know, where they are, what's the business level, what are they doing. You know, we're keeping in contact so that there are a minimum number of surprises. I worry, you know, as I do here in the South Shore and in Lake County, I worry for our brothers and sisters in the hospitality business throughout America. You know, these kinds of closures have devastating effects on working people.
Oh, yeah.
Waiters and waitresses and cooks and chefs and suppliers. This virus is more crippling to our industry than 9/11 was. And we've got to get through this, and that's why I circle back to personal accountability. The sooner that we stop spreading this, the sooner that we can start moving ahead and get business back to normal, then people who are working for tips and working those jobs in our industry that allow them to climb the ladder from server to owner, we've got to think about those people. And when you stop going to restaurants and you stop doing some stuff, it has devastating effects on small business owners and their employees. If you don't feel like going to a restaurant, call Uber Eats and order out. Get a delivery, do something, because we've got to keep our economy moving.
Thank you so much, Spiros.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Deb Stempowski with the U.S. Census Bureau.
Well, it happens every 10 years, and the government wants to count you. There's a good reason, and a lot of major reasons that have to do with money and how you getting counted here in Northwest Indiana will count for Northwest Indiana. The U.S. Census is getting ready for the 2020 Census, and to find out more about all the preparations that are getting underway today, let's talk with the Assistant Director for Decennial Programs for the U.S. Census Bureau, Deb Stempowski, is with us. Deb, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Glad to be here, Chris, on an exciting day for the 2020 Census.
That's right. And I guess it's something that we should be looking in our mailbox for pretty soon. What is going to be showing up in our mailboxes as far as the census is concerned? What's it going to look like?
Households are going to begin to receive today invitations to respond to the census. That's on a flow basis through March 20th. They'll receive a mailer from the Census Bureau that has our 2020 census stamp of approval on there with our logo on the back, so the envelope is familiar. Inside that envelope, they'll have information on how to respond online, by phone, or by mail. There's also information there that'll allow people for online and phone to receive support in 13 languages. That includes English. If anyone questions whether or not what they've received from the Census Bureau is actually the 2020 Census, they can go to our website, 2020census.gov, and there's information there that'll show you what it looks like and also help answer questions to make sure people are feel secure with that they do indeed have the 2020 census materials.
I know that we'll talk probably in more detail and specifics about what people can actually get to see when they get it in the mail here soon. But the more important thing, I think, probably is to why people should respond to the 2020 census. Why should people care about what they get in the mail?
Well, the 2020 census is a once-a-decade effort that is extremely important to all communities. It does shape your future for the next 10 years. First and foremost, it determines how many seats your state gets in Congress, but then it also shapes decisions about how public funds, up to $675 billion in federal funds, actually are distributed annually to the states and local communities. And then really local communities, states, governments, even school systems, as some examples, use the census information to do appropriate planning for services that their community might need, like, for example, schools or maybe fire and emergency services. So you can see that the census data is used at the national level to determine seats in Congress, but all the way down to the local level to make sure communities have the services that they need to be successful. Pretty important.
I think people forget about the fact that they figure, okay, that's fine for political reasons, but they forget about the fact that so much money, and we're talking in particular everything that basically comes to a community from the federal government of some type, community development block grant money, just for one example, all happens because people have gotten the information through the census data to be able to determine that these folks back here in Northwest Indiana, in this particular community, this particular county, are eligible for this type of funding.
Right. That's absolutely correct. There is a wide variety of uses for the census, and getting that word out about how important it is for a variety of reasons, I think, is key. So folks realize as soon as they get that invitation, we'd like them to respond and be counted.
Will you describe for us what the 2020 census questionnaire is going to look like? It's really very simple form. It just has questions. Maybe it's the questions on there that kind of is daunting and maybe scares people.
Actually, the questions are pretty easy and straightforward, from things like name and address to date of birth and age, sex, race. And then a question on home ownership. It's really a very short form that I think people will find they can fill out quickly. The census doesn't ask things like Social Security number or bank information, so it's very easy, safe, straightforward, and the online instrument is very efficient in collecting your data if folks want to respond online.
When the information gets to somebody's hands, they take a look at this questionnaire, and they probably may be surprised that it seems the comments so far is, and it sounds very complicated, but it really is not. It's very very straightforward and very simple form to fill out.
It is straightforward, simple, and by offering three ways to respond, from internet to phone and by mail, we hope that we've provided enough ways for folks to be able to respond in the way that makes them most comfortable.
Let's talk about these different ways here. First, we talked just briefly here about the paper questionnaire that will be in the mail. So it kind of describes what the questions are and what you can put down and as your response. When you want to go online to be able to fill out your questionnaire, how do you do that?
So you can start by visiting our site, 2020census.gov, and there's a prominent Respond Now button there that you can click. You can fill out the census one of two ways. In your invitation, we send a census ID number that you can key into the online instrument and respond. But if you don't happen to have that invitation handy, there is a way to respond that's easy to find on that main page where you can respond without that census ID. So going online, going to the website, I think it's pretty straightforward. It's actually a very simple questionnaire, as you've said. And folks can complete it in about 10 minutes.
Now, as far as the telephone's concerned, you mentioned that by phone is another option, too, that you have to be able to send in the information. How does that work?
So within the invitation that folks will receive, there's an insert that lists the 13, the census is conducted on phone and online in 13 languages, including English. It will provide to you the phone number to respond in each of those 13 languages, as well as the URL if you wanted to do it in one of those 13 languages. So folks can, you know, call one of those numbers, they can respond, or if they just have a question, they can also get questions answered on those phone lines.
There's a little handy guide that you can take a look at as well, too, as to what the questionnaire is all about. It mentions on there, too, about how the people are counted, and in particular, the types of people that are counted. And that, of course, this will all be in the questions that you get on the questionnaire. But tell us how the U.S. Census Bureau figures in to be able to make this count of everybody who happens to be in a particular residence, regardless of whether it's a house or a mobile home or whether it's an apartment. Or what it may be.
Right. We want people to count everyone that's usually living or staying at that address on census day. And that includes, very importantly, young children or new babies. So we put a lot of information within the instrument or on the paper questionnaire on who to count in there. But the general rule is anyone who's usually living or staying at that address on April 1st. And if people have specific questions to if someone should be counted on 2020census.gov, we try to provide more information on more specific situations.
I know you also, through other means, count other people that should be counted by the census. They include people that live maybe in a residential nursing home or someplace like that, or even a correctional facility, don't you?
Yes, we do. We actually run some special operations for folks that live in what we call group quarters, and we do that work working very closely with the administrator of the facility that they're in, and their reporting is coordinated through that facility administrator. So a little bit different than the households that receive individual invitations, but we do conduct the census to count everyone in the United States, and we work directly with those points of contact at the facilities that are in that group quarters group to make sure that we get an accurate count for them as well.
Now, we've talked about the various ways, and many of these are high-tech. We talk about being able to fill out the questionnaire on the internet. We also talk about the phone. We talk about the mailing that folks are going to get. But I guess there's always that way that you actually get to talk to somebody, if you need to. The old-fashioned enumerator, as they're called, and probably still call them that, don't they? That's kind of this, I don't want to say it's the last resort, but that's kind of the way that you all can, at the Census Bureau, be sure to get everybody's counted by actually having to send somebody out and visit somebody. Tell us, with the changes that have been made to make it easier to be able to do the census reform this year, where does the personal touch still come in?
Yes, the personal touch is a great way to put it. So after we've sent reminders to households up to 5 mailings and we haven't had them respond on their own through online, phone, or paper, we will send out what people think of as the census taker to collect their information at individual households. If we don't find you home the first time we're there, we'll actually leave a notice on your door, and we'll still encourage self-response via the 3 modes. If you choose to do so, you don't have to wait for us to come back. If you're then energized to go online or give us a call to collect your data. So that traditional census taker work begins in May after we've done a staged mail strategy over starting, of course, today and then running through the end of April.
Well, Deb, we're kind of at the point here where we have to at least give the website. If anybody has questions, if they just can't wait to find out more about the 2020 U.S. Census and get maybe some misconceptions cleared up, where can the folks go on the internet to find out more about the census and about the Census Bureau?
2020census.gov. That has all the information you need to respond to the census, how we use the census, and other resources that are out there that work with the census.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.